us do over there, and you know, in Mayport now. But when I first started off, we was dragging just a couple of flat nets. Well, a long time back, it was just one flat net. But when I started in full time, we just drug a couple of flat nets. But now it's four mongoose nets, you know, for white shrimp, and they're working pretty good on the different kinds of shrimp, brown shrimp too.
Yeah, but Charles, it changed a lot over the years, ain't it?
Like drastically.
You used to pull one net, and yeah. Then you pull four.
Yeah, we start off with one.
Yeah.
Now you got four, and I did see a boat one time with six. I don't know how he did it, but he had six, but it was small. But he had six nets on there, but I never seen but that one boat do that. So it must not have worked out too good.
Lawrence, can I ask you to answer that same question? The basic type of fishing and boats that you use?
Well, the basic type boat we use is a flat bottom. We use a V-bottom and flat bottom boat. We're usually 16 feet, 14, 16-foot boat, and use outboard motors on them because the waters we run, we don't run that far, and we don't haul that weight, and we don't pull anything with them. It's just strictly for running, getting there. But going back to boats now, I was telling you, when I was a little feller, the boats we used back then had 8-horse Briggs and Stratton engines in them, and they were built out of old Cypress lumber, and the things weighed a ton, and had a rudder that you put on the boat to start with. That was the first thing he done was hook the rudder up, because that's what we used. And then we went into old Model T engines in the boats. And they were something else because you cranked them with the old Stilson wrench, where the shaft runs straight into the motors. There wasn't any reverse in them. The shaft runs straight into the motor. You put a pipe wrench on the shaft and kick it over and hope it didn't kick you back. Try to stay clear of it. But well, it's just changed drastically. We don't even use that type of boat anymore, or we don't use that type of net anymore. Like I say, there's been changes made I never dreamed that I would see, but it has, and it's all for the better, I guess. But that's about all I can tell you on it. But the boats we use now, we just use small outboards, 25, 30-horse motors, and so on and so forth.
Now, for those of you who just joined us, my name is David Taylor, and I work for the staff here at the Florida Folklife Programs, and these are three commercial fishermen from different parts of the state that are sitting up here with me talking about how they've learned about fishing, the types of boats and nets and lines and hooks that they use. And I'll just introduce them again for your benefit. On my left here is Charles Herron from Jacksonville, who fishes out of the small harbor of Mayport. And next to me over here is Lawrence Bennett from Wilatka. Anyone know where Wilatka is? Where is that?
It's on the beautiful St. John's River just south of Palatka. About 15 miles. Prettiest place in the world.
Okay.
They got a red light, too.
And this real quiet fellow over here is this is Glenn Philman from Steinhatchee. Now, does anyone know where Steinhatchee is? Who can tell me? Can you tell me? What part of the state? Northeast, south? The western part. And it's on what big body of water? That's right. Okay. Now, I'm going to turn this microphone back over to Mr. Philman for the last 10 minutes of this workshop. Right after this workshop, we're going to have three people who make fishing nets come up. And if you want to stick around, you can even ask them some questions about that. But I want to ask Mr. Philman now to tell you something about the types of boats and equipment that he uses when he goes fishing.
Thank you, Dave. Like he said, I'm kind of shy and kind of... You know, don't talk very much, just an hour or two if I get a chance, because I really like to talk about my livelihood, because it's something that it's always been my heart. The reason being that I'm my own boss, other than my wife. Of course, she's the boss, you know. But I work, you know, according to what I feel like I need to do to make a living. But anyhow, getting back to the question that David asked me there, in other words, our type of fishing that we do is what we call shallow water fishing. And originally, back a long time ago now, I'm going to go way back on that. And I'm not that old. I'm 57 years old. But like I say, my father before me fished for a living. That was his living. We're talking history now. In other words, he fished with what we call skiffs that were made out of cypress wood. And the only power you had was oars. That we had a fella down there that built all our oars for us. You could get one, it'd fit your hand, I guess. You could get a 7-footing, or you could get an 8-footing, or a 6-footing, whatever fit your hand. But that was the only power that you had to get up and down the shore. And back then, in other words, they wouldn't no ice. You didn't have ice to ice your fish with. Your fishermen back then went off and they camped on islands and they hauled salt with them. And they salted their fish and maybe be gone a couple of days, you know, or 3 days. And then when they come back in, like I said, there was no ice. And back then, not a lot of places to go. So you had people that came down from up in this country, maybe, from up around Live Oak and from everywhere up in the farming section, and they come down and they swap their food, whatever it might be, sweet potatoes and things like that, for the fish that the fishermen caught. And that was, in other words, you didn't jump in a brand new Cadillac and run on off, because there wasn't none. You know, back then people had a lot of time to associate with one another, to help one another. I'm talking history now. Nowadays, you know, we don't have enough of time. We're living a little bit too high on the hog, I guess that's what I say. You know, living a little bit too high on the hog, and I have to work, my wife has to work, and if I got a boy that's big enough to work, he has to work too to make ends meet, you know. So I'm not talking history here, I'm just talking facts. But anyhow, getting back to our fishing, in other words, I remember the first outboard motor that I ever seen in my life. That was the prettiest thing that I ever seen. It was a 6-horse Alto 1-cylinder kicker. That's what it was. Nowadays, you see one on the boat, it's 150, 200, 225, you know, and that thing will run 60 miles an hour. Back then, we had the rowing and we got this kicker, and you could hear us coming for an hour before we got there. But I tell you what, it did beat that pulling with them oars. It beat that a long way. We could sit up there and enjoy ourselves, you know, and let the wind blow through our hair rather than sweat to death trying to get in. But anyhow, in other words, we kind of got a little better, you know. We learned from yesterday what we done yesterday. We learned from our mistakes, you know. What we've done, we prosper that way from history, in other words. That's the way we learn what to do, is from history. Something that we'd done yesterday, we do better tomorrow. And so we moved on up into what we're fishing now. We call it a bird dog. And I'll never forget one time I was talking to a man, and I got talking to him and told him I paid $1,800 for a bird dog. And he looked at me, he said, "My God, I wouldn't turn him out of the pen." But he didn't understand. He didn't understand what I was talking about. I was talking about a bird dog, which I have a friend that's in our chapter out there that's building one right now, and he'll probably be up on stage sometime to talk about it. But anyhow, it's what we call a one-man boat, and the motor, it has a tunnel in it, and whatever size motor, and they normally run a 50 to an 80-horse kicker on it. That's what they normally run, but it's a one-man boat. He stands up in the front, and he's able, like I say, we shallow water fish, but he's able to look over in the water off of the bow of the boat, and he's able to see a lot of times the fish that don't jump or make any sign. He can see them running on the bottom. So a lot of times he makes a grosser bill with this boat where we used to couldn't make one because we didn't see the fish, you know, unless they made a ripple or they jumped or something like that. But now, a lot of times they see them running off on the bottom. I imagine my 10 minutes is probably about up. But I'll promise you one thing. If David gives me another chance, I'll sit here and talk to you all day about history, because I love it. I love it. Like I say, we all learn from what we done yesterday, you know. It's kind of like playing checkers, you know. You learn from your mistakes. You done moved the wrong place, you know, with that checker. So you decide, let's make another way. Let's move another way tomorrow. And to me, that's kind of like history, you know. You learn to do things better from what you done yesterday.
Okay. Thanks very much, Glenn. And he's absolutely right when he's talking about history, or tradition is another word. learning by watching and copying what other people do. I know that most of you here are in school now, and you're thinking ahead. Maybe you got another 6 or 8 years to go before you get out of high school. You're thinking about a lot of books and things you got to read. Well, not everything in learning is through school, of course. And these three men who are sitting here with me have learned their occupations, for the most part, not in school at all, but by watching and copying their fathers and uncles and other men in their communities who are carrying on this way of earning a living on the water in their communities. And these men and other people who are here in the area here have mostly all learned in that way. They're going to be here all day, and you can talk with them about many of the things that they're making here today. And they know how to do many things in addition to the nets they're making, the traps they're making. They know about a lot of things, and they'd be willing to hear your questions. Okay, I want to thank Glenn Philman and Lawrence Bennett and Charles Herron for joining me here this morning to talk about how they learned and about fishing in their communities. Now, if you want to stick around, we're going to have three people from other communities to talk about fishing nets and how they're made. And I'm going to leave a little bit of time in that workshop for you to ask some questions, too, if you'd like to do that. So can we give these folks a round of applause for joining us this morning? Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you all.
Thank you for letting us talk to you.
My name is David Taylor, and I have three very experienced net makers from different parts of the state here with me this morning to tell you something about how they learned about making nets, and particularly the types of nets that they make and all the different varieties of those types. So let me introduce these folks to you right now. On my far right is Albert Moore from the community of Cortez, which is on the west coast of Florida. And in the middle, the rose between the thorns here, I guess, is Gene Smith from Port St. Joe, which is near Apalachicola on the Gulf Coast, the western part of the state. And sitting next to me is Mr. Coaster Bougier from Apalachicola. And I'm going to ask Coaster first to tell you about how he got started making nets. And as I mentioned in the earlier workshop, just about everyone who's in the Folklife area today has experience in many types of things having to do with fishing, not just what they're doing, like making nets, but many other types of things too, like boat building and fishing and many other things that we'll be talking about right here under this tent today. So, Mr. Bougier, how'd you get started making nets?
My father taught me. I guess I must have been about 16 or 17 years old before I could turn out one without making a mess. And he would stand right there and see that I'd done it right, because he's highly particular. Everything had to be just right. He didn't believe in cutting no corners. And I'm the same way today. I don't do it either. Too much depends on a man's living, you know, to take shortcuts is the way I look at it. And, of course, it takes me longer to build a net than most net makers, but I try to do a good job. So,
what was that first net like that you made?
Well, it was altogether different than the nets you make today. You used cotton, you know. They used what they call flat nets. Of course, flat nets is coming back again. I guess it's like a clothes styles come and go, but they're coming back again. A lot of people starting to use them again. They starting to make modifications and changing up just little things. And,
what kind of fish do you catch in those types of nets?
Oh, we catch just everything that's on the bottom. Catch the shrimp, flounders, skates, stingarees, catfish, croakers, white trout, shiners. Just anything that's laying on the bottom. And sometimes the croakers get so bad you can't shrimp for them. They get so thick and you just can't handle them. But they're always small croakers.
Now let me ask that question to Gene Smith from Port St. Joe. How did you get started making nets, and what type of nets do you make?
I make any kind of net. It doesn't matter. But I'm making a cat's net here. And it catches mostly mullet, but anything that you put in, that you cast this net over, it catches.
Can you hear, Gene, over there?
No.
Good. Put that a little close to your mouth like that, okay?
I'm trying to switch.
Excuse me.
I'll have to get you that in mind.
Okay, you can use Mr. Boozer's if you can reach. What was my question? How'd you start learning about making nets?
Oh, okay. My brother-in-law, I used to hold the webbing for my brother-in-law when he used to mend his nets. So I just gradually picked it up and started doing this, and I've been working on nets since 1965. And this is a cast net. And I used four panels of this to put together. And on the bottom of this net, I put a chain, and that weights it down. When you throw it, it goes down into the water in a big circle. And then you pull it back in by a hand line that's attached to this end. And then you pull it back in, and your net closes at the bottom, and it brings your fish up in this net. And then you take it up on the land, and you pick it out.
Does anyone know what a cast net is? How many have heard of that? How many have used a cast net before? Okay, how do you throw it? Yeah? Now, where are you from that you would use a net like that? When you go to the beach? Okay. Now, that's the type of net that Jean Smith here makes. Okay? And you'll see her later on with her husband, Bobby, making a cast net right over here to our right. Okay? For those of you who have just joined us, I'm talking with three net makers, Mr. Costa Bougier, who's sitting next to me, and Gene Smith, and Albert Mora, and they all make different kinds of nets, and that's what we're talking about here today. Now, Gene, can you again describe what's happening on this diagram that you have here?
Yes, sir. This net, I cut, you can cut three sections of this that I have the diagram laid out for here. You can cut three sections, and you sew this together here and here. Okay, this is your bag. You turn up after you get all this sewed together. You turn the bag up, which holds the fish when you throw the net out into a circle. The fish go down in this bag right here. And then you have a hand line on here, and you pull it in, and your fish are fastened up in this. You take it up on the land or on the ground, and then you pick your fish out, and then you're ready to cast again.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard to understand in picture sometime. Now, after this workshop, you might want to go over to where they're actually making this net, and Mr. Smith will show you how to throw it, too. Okay? Now, I'd like to ask Albert Moore from Cortez to tell us a little bit about the type of net that he's making today and how you learned about making those types of nets.
Well, how I learned... I don't know how to put it in just a few minutes. It took me 51 years to learn it, but we'll put some of it in there anyway. I've made beach seines, haul seines, stop nets, trammel nets, gill nets, you name it, and I've done it. But right now I'm working on gill nets. That's what I usually do most of it this time.
Now, what are your nets made out of?
All monofilament.
Okay, who knows what monofilament is? Monofilament. Anyone have a guess? Anyone guess? What is monofilament, Mr. Moore?
Well, that's the same string that you use on your rod and reel. That it's a clear... Now, what it's made out of, I don't know unless it's coal. It could be coal. There's some monofilament right there. But that comes in different sizes. You have it from half the size of your little finger right on down, and you can't hardly see it. And... when that's in the water, you can't see it, period. Mm-hmm. So that's why most people is using that monofilament. I think, though, Louisiana has a law now that they've banded the single-strand monofilament. I believe you can use the twist strand, can't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the single strand, they've banded that.
Okay.
So, but our gill nets or trammel nets, you take a trammel net, now you have a, you can fix a five piece net for one net, which you have a, say, a 14-inch or 12-inch tramble on each side of what we call the wall. That's your regular net. You may have an inch and a quarter. You may have a 4-inch or a 4.5-inch wall. All right, then you'll get a 14-inch to go on each side of that. And then you'll get a single net, say maybe 2 foot deep, to go on the bottom and on the top. And then you hang all that together,
mm-hmm.
which is an awful mess.
Now, a lot of these folks in the audience here are students in schools, and they learn a lot of things in books. Did you learn how to make nets in books, from books?
No, I learned when I was 7 years old before I got to the books. I started in, before I went to school, I'd go down and pick up a piece of an old net that they'd throwed away, which I'd have to tie a few jugs or something on it for floats, and then I'd put rocks on the bottom for lead.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd always go out and set that net of a morning before I went to school, and I'd go to school and come back of an evening. And years ago, we used to have an awful lot of flounder mm-hmm. and mango snapper and stuff like that, and they'd lay up on that net. And I'd go pick them off every day when I come from school. And then that night when I had a little time, I'd go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty well occupied most of my time with fishing where I should have been in school.
Well, I'd like to ask Mr. Bougier now to tell you a little bit about the tools that net makers use. Now, before I do, though, does anyone have any idea what kind of tools you would need to make a net? Who knows? What would you, if you're going to make a net, what would you need? Anyone have any idea at all? Nobody has any idea. Okay, well, let's let Mr. Bougier tell us about what you need.
All right, the first thing you need is a good sharp knife and a needle. That's all. And you just cut out, making a shrimp net, you just cut out the pieces and sew it together. When you got it all sewed up, then you hang it in the lines. You put the corks on it and the chain on the bottom. Years ago, we used to use leads. Now we use chain. That's all there is to it. When you put the pocket on it and put the rings on the pocket and the head ropes in it and the thimbles and all that, it consume about 3 or 4 days' work to do it.
Okay. Now, Gene Smith has got some of those tools that Mr. Bougier referred to a minute ago. Now, can you tell us how they're used and why they're shaped the way they are, Gene?
Yes, sir. This is the needle or a shuttle. You take and you put your twine on these needles, and then you go through your webbing and you tie your knots. This is a homemade needle that's about 15 years old here. It was whittled out of hickory. And I use, to cut my net, I use either a pocket knife or a pair of scissors, either one.
Okay. I need a volunteer from the audience. Can you come up here for a minute? Yeah. Come on up. Now, I'd like Gene to show you how the twine goes onto that needle. You think you could show her how to do that?
Okay. I'd like her to try that. Why don't you unravel a bit of it? Come and look close to see how she's doing it. Let's see if you can do it, too. Because this is how many traditions are learned, just by watching someone who's more experienced, remembering, copying, and doing it again. You notice these needles originally were hand-carved of wood, and now most of them are made of plastic or some kind of synthetic material, but the designs have stayed the same over the years because the design works.
I thought you crossed it. You can't cross your needle. Let me show you one more time.
Okay. Now, you got to watch close.
Turn it over. Each time you thread it, turn it over.
See her thumb hit the end of that needle? When your thumb hits the end of it, that pushes it back just a little bit so you'll finally go around the...
Okay, let's try it again.
There you go. You got it now.
There.
That's
right. See, she's got it. It took, about a minute and a half maybe.
See, you'll never forget that now.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Now, some traditions like making nets can be broken down into many different operations. And one of the simplest ones is that she just learned in a minute and a half, is learning how to thread your needle, to put the twine on in this way. Now, Mr. Bougier, why do you put the twine on the needle that way? Why is that any better than putting it in a ball or something?
Well, it wouldn't come off the needle if you didn't do it that way. It'd tangle up. Norway has machines now for threading needles. You stick the needle in the machine and crank it, and it threads itself. You don't have to do that. It turns over automatically.
Mr. Moore, are your needle? Do you use needles, and are they the same?
Yeah, I use the same thing, only mine's much larger nose than what she's got. She's using those needles for a small mash knit. According to the size mash you got, to size needle you use, because you have to take so much more twine for a larger mash mending it.
What's a mash? I wonder if anyone knows what that means. Anyone know what that means? A mash? A mash, sometimes called a mesh, spelled M-E-S-H. Can you tell me, Mr. Moore, what
that means? Yeah, that's the square that makes your knit. You see all that knit there? Each one of those are called mashes, and that's what it is.
Are there other names for other parts of the nets that you make?
No, well, you just got your lead line, your court line, which is your lead line, your bottom. Your court line is your top, which the court floats. And that's about it on a gill net. Your bottom, your top, and your webbing.
Okay. Now, Mr. Moore just referred to a gill net, the type of net that he uses. Anyone know why it would be called a gill net? Why do you think? What do you think? Yeah. The fish would be what? Is that right, Mr. Moore?
They're gill in it, right. Now, you take a gill net, a fish, you don't move it. You don't pull the gill net. You leave it lay there, and the fish will get in it, theirself, and gill in it. Now, if you've got a seine, beach seine, which you'll get overboard and haul that to the beach, fish goes out in a big pocket, you take them all out at one time. If you got a trawl, you pull that back of your boat, the fish goes back in the bag, and you pull them all up at one time. But a gill net, a trammel net, they all... They're gill in it. You don't have to pull it at all.
Okay, so it's a net that stays set in the water.
Right. It stays right where you put it unless the tide moves it or something.
Okay. Now, what about, Mr. Bougier, the nets that you make? Do you set those in the water, or how do they work to catch fish?
No, they drug behind a boat. Got doors spreading them. That net I built out there in the tree, it'd take a set of 8-foot, 40 doors to open that net up. And in the middle of it, it'll have a steel torpedo. We call it a torpedo, piece of pipe full of concrete, weighed about 300 pounds to hold the middle of it down. What you're actually doing is two nets, but you're spreading it with one set of doors instead of four doors. It's called a Siamese net. And it wasn't invented in Siam. A boy over in Panama City made the first one, a man named Skipper Carden. That's his invention. But that's the way it works. It's a two nets actually in one. You just eliminate the wing on one side and the wing on the other side.
Did you ever do any fishing with this type of net yourself?
Oh, yeah. Before I sold my boat, that I used them for white shrimp a lot.
How long did you do that type of fishing?
Them type of nets been out, I imagine, about 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm. How long were you a commercial fisherman?
Oh, I run the first captain of the first boat, I think I was 14 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't much of a boat, but I was the captain.
Yeah.
This is a Vietnamese cast net here. See, this would be your center. This is little sections of webbing that's cut in strips and put together. And it makes a very big net with lots of webbing in it. And this is the diagram of a Vietnamese net here.
Okay. Did you hear that? She was talking about this diagram of a Vietnamese net. Are there Vietnamese people who live near you?
Yeah, I have some friends and they work with me.
Uh-huh.
That's Vietnamese.
Yeah. Now, Gene, could you tell us what you do for work when you're not making cast nets?
I make purse seines, monofilament nets of any kind. I don't care. Any kind of net, I can make it. I work for Raphael Fisheries in Port St. Joe, Florida. I make all their purse seines, gill nets, trammel nets, mackerel nets. It don't matter. I can make any of them.
Now, does anyone have a question to ask Mr. Mora or Mrs. Smith or Mr. Bougier this morning? Or does everyone know everything there is to know about making a net. There's a question.
Ask Mr. Moore if he's ever done any bait fishing. What kind of net he uses?
Okay.
How about you coming up here and answering that? Yeah, I've done some purse seining.
Smarty.
Any other questions out there?
My cousin.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to ask Mr. Bougie what he likes about making shrimp trawls, what he likes about network.
Well, I guess it's just a habit, a challenge to you. You learn something new every day. You never get too old to learn something. People think they know it all is wrong because you learn something new every day in making nets. You need different methods, different type nets. And you need, if you're catching these different species of shrimp, you need different nets. And it's a challenge to you, really, because when you build a net for a man, you don't want him to come back and tell you, well, this damn thing won't fish. You got to throw it in the shop, and then you got to cut it out to lines and rehang it, try to find out what's wrong with it. It makes you feel good when a man calls you up on the telephone and tells you it works fine. And I'll be by to get another one in 2 or 3 months.
You got to satisfy your customers. You have to know what the
man,
customer
got
wants.
A question, baby. Well, that depends on where you're fishing at. Bad bottom, you fished in Louisiana around them oil rigs where they got a lot of pipe junk on the bottom, you lose a net, $700-$800 net in 5 minutes. But if you use a net on good bottom, 3 or 4 years, you get out of a nylon net. We used to get just 7 or 8 months out of a cotton net.
Gene, what about cast nets? How long should they last?
Well, it's according to where you throw them.
Yeah.
You can make one last you 3 or 4 years. You just have to know the bottom where you're throwing it, like out on the beach, you know, where there's no stumps, no roots or anything in the ground, in the water. Well, then a cast net will last you a long time, but you're supposed to hang it always in the shade when you get through. Don't leave it in the sun, because the sun will cook it and it's gone.